Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Petrified Podcast. I'm your host, Damian Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
And today, we are talking about Hellraiser, probably one of the most original and greatest horror movies, you know, that came out of the 80s, besides, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, and all that. Yeah, we're talking about that today, and because they redid.
Yeah, they're re-releasing it this coming week, at least here in our market.
There. Yeah.
So they've remastered it. And so,
4K, right?
4K?
Yeah. So that's why we're going to talk about it today. We thought it would be a perfect movie to talk about. And so, but before we get started, please remember to follow us on Instagram, podcastpetrify24. And thank you so much for listening. So I hope you enjoy today's episode. And yeah, please rate, review where you can. Follow us. Spread us around. Spread the word of the Petrified. And let's get into Hellraiser. And raise some hell. Oh, man. I remember seeing this movie. I was pretty young. I was like 12 when I saw this movie on TV.
And that's crazy because when you were 12, like,
you were supposed to be watching this.
This movie came out when I was like 13.
True. Oh, yeah, yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty young when I saw this one. Wasn't supposed to see it, but I just caught it on, you know, I forgot what channel it was on, but they were showing it and I just ended up watching it.
Yeah, you even caught an EFT, so I mean that's a completely different story.
Yeah, yeah, but it's such a good storyline. Of course, you know, written by Clive Barker, who did, you know, oh my gosh, the story is
he wrote Cabal, basically, yeah. Which was Nightbreed, and this is actually based off the novella, The Hellbound Heart.
Yeah,
so
yeah, and I mean he just has a unique way of showing things. Of course, you know, showing kind of how Hellraiser is pretty much about, you know, how far are you going to, will you go for love, I guess you could say, or lust in this sense.
Yeah. How far will you go to fulfill, you know, the seven deadly sins?
Like, yeah.
What are you going to do? So.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, he has a very unique way of showing things. Of course, yeah, with Nightbreed. I mean, I think the artistic style is what I'm trying to say. Is very unique.
Oh, yeah.
It brings this.
It's got that very gothic feel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, being raised in Liverpool, I'm sure that had a lot to do with
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of that comes into play. And it's his characters, even in like their villainous forms, are very romanticized.
Yes.
So that's something that, especially like in the 80s, when you draw a comparative line between him and the other, you know, horror villains that were out there, you know, Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger,
yeah.
You didn't have that. Michael Myers, you know, there wasn't that really, like, almost drawing a comparison to Lugosi as Dracula.
Yeah.
That wasn't there. It wasn't existent.
Yeah. It was very real, you know, either they were silent or they had quips, pretty much. They were kind of these funny punchline characters.
Yeah, Freddy was the Gilbert Gottfried of, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and yeah, that's what's really cool to see about this one. And it came, you know, closer towards the end of pretty much the 80s, which would, you know, bleed into the 90s, and then you'd have, you know, many, many sequels after that. But we start off, we have, you know, the cast. We have Julia, who is the main antagonist of this movie, who Claire Higgins played her very, very well, because you despise this woman.
You hate her from jump.
Through the whole movie. I don't get it. I mean, character-wise, like, who she is, like, dude, like, but, I mean, I guess it's that feeling of, pretty much she cheated on her husband, and she's been trying to chase that high, I guess you could say, that she got from Uncle Frank, which is her husband's, you know, brother.
Brother.
And it's like she can't let go of that fantasy. And her husband, they find, you know, I guess it's
his childhood
home. Yeah. And so they go to look, you know, check it out. They're moving into it, and you get introduced to Uncle Frank, pretty his brother, and you see him buying a puzzle.
Yeah, he's in Southeast Asia somewhere. It looks like maybe he's, you know, perhaps maybe he was in the military.
Yeah.
And so he's remaining in country after service, which a lot of people did. And so he's kind of chasing that high.
Yeah.
He's looking for the next best thing, kind of deer hunter, you know, Russian roulette thing.
Yeah.
He's pushing the limits. And so you find him bartering in this like dirty kind of tea shop.
Yeah.
And he's just laying stacks of cash out because he's buying this puzzle box.
Yeah.
From a vendor. And so he goes there and he's purchasing it. And then I guess kind of what gets implied is that he returns stateside. And so when Larry and his wife, Julia, are moving into, you know, his family's home.
Yeah.
Frank has kind of been squatting out upstairs.
Yeah, man. It's, yeah, you could tell like how he, how, I don't know, I'd say like crude he is, like how kind of, you know, he doesn't live in a bedroom.
No, he lives in the darkest, dankest room of the house.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know, it's just so dirty. The house is dirty. It's like unkept. Kind of where what his state of mind is, pretty much. It's dirty and unkept, pretty much. And he solves the puzzle and in the beginning and is end up, you just see him being pretty much like tortured after that. And yeah, and then it cuts forward to them finding the house or going into the house.
Yeah, but first they reassemble his face.
Oh, yeah, that's remember, right. Yeah.
Because by being tortured, they actually, they tear your flesh to pieces.
Yeah.
And so Chatterer, or no, it was Butterball. Butterball actually in the beginning of the movie is, Butterball is, the villains in the movie are called Cenobites.
Yeah.
They're not really villains. They're more like,
they're angels to some.
Demons to others. They're like very ambiguous, you know, that they can be like your friend, but they're also, you know, they've come to, you know, delve out torture.
Yeah, that's their job, yeah.
And so Frank gets torn apart in pieces, and Butterball, a big, heavyset one that, in my opinion, he kind of resembles, you know, Gluttony.
Yeah.
He's fat and he has his stomach cut open almost as though he can, like, take no more.
Yeah.
So he's sitting there and he builds Frank's face. And then you chime into the future. And then, you find Larry and Julia moving into Larry's childhood home.
Yeah.
And the minute that they get in, there's lots of references about, you know, Frank.
Yeah.
And they're kind of doing the tour, the nickel tour of the house to see what's going on. And so, they, like I said, they go into this room upstairs, which I would assume is an attic. It doesn't really look like
a room. I think it's the attic, yeah.
I think it's the attic, and it just looks cold and desolate. There's no lighting in the room. It's just bad. And there's kind of like a disheveled mat laying on the floor with kind of like a army footlocker next to it with all kinds of like weird stuff in it, like little sexual, like little figurines,
yeah, statues and stuff like that.
Pictures. And there's always this constant underlying talk of Frank, Frank, Frank.
Yeah.
Well, then, you know, Julia goes in, and as Larry retreats downstairs, Julia's there because Larry is actually going downstairs because he's receiving a phone call from his daughter, Kirsty.
Yeah.
And so Julia decides to stay in the room, and as she's in the room, she starts going through the footlocker, and she finds all these really vivid pictures of Frank in sexual positions. And
yeah, with all these other women.
Yeah, that with these other women. But then she finds one that's kind of like a nice black and white portraiture with a lady kind of leaning over, yet still she's grabbing his genitals. Yeah. But she tears the picture. She folds it and puts it in a little pocket.
Yeah, she cuts the lady's head off. Like
you don't want to see that.
Yeah, she wants to fantasize about Frank, not Frank and this other woman. And so you could tell that there was something between the both of them, and the dynamic between her and Larry is very, you know, rocky.
Strained, yeah.
You know, you could tell that, well, he seems like a decent dude. She's just like put off by him, and I think it's because of the encounter that she had with him.
I think that, yeah, because they do kind of span back on what happened between Julia and Frank.
Yeah.
And basically, I'm not sure if it was the wedding day or the day after, but basically the wedding dress is still there.
Yeah.
Frank shows up because he came for the wedding, he says. He shows up at the door in a rainstorm.
Yeah.
And she is unsure who he is, and he said, it's Uncle Frank. And so they sit there and they have a conversation at the door. And it's very charged. It's a very charged. You can kind of tell, like, he is just dominating her with the questions asked, seeing how subservient she's going to be. And basically, they retreat back to the room, and her wedding dress is laying on the bed. And he obviously lays her down, and, you know, you can kind of tell where it's going from there.
Yeah.
You know, they have sex on the wedding dress.
Yeah, and pretty much, yeah, it's just...
From that point, she's sprung. It's on, and I think that's why constantly she's kept this fire burning in her loins for Frank.
Yeah.
Like, nothing Larry could have ever done, regardless of how good of a guy this is, because she's just that scummy.
Yeah.
Nothing could have ever... like giving her, I don't know if it was the excitement, if it was the fact that she was cheating, what it was that fired her up. But this woman's got a burning ember in her loins, and it's got Frank written all over it.
Yeah. Frank. Yeah. And so it pretty much just shows him fixing up the house, and then her just standing in the attic where he lived, because that's where he lived, and just... revisiting those days, that day that she had with him, you know, of her getting, you know, plowed out by Frank, and she's just like literally, like, to me it's like she almost reaches completion just thinking about this dude. Like, she's literally like almost like about to like topple over just thinking about their interaction. It's like, I mean, he must have been laying it pretty good if you're doing it. He doesn't have to touch you.
Well, see, this movie, just another sidebar on this movie, is this movie actually, in its original nature, was rated X.
Yeah.
Because, like, some of the things that they did, and, you know, like, you'll watch in some of, like, the scenes, like the sex scene, Frank basically gives, like, two thrusts. And apparently the sexual nature of the movie
was... It was toned down a lot.
It was toned down to where, you know, the censor said, hey, you can't get more than two thrust on this
one. Because in the original storyline, in the book, it's a lot more...
Oh, yeah.
Their encounter is a lot more... How do you say it? Like...
Oh, it's more graphic.
It's more graphic. I mean,
He dominates her. Part of her... deal is he actually sodomizes her.
Yeah.
And it's like he really degrades her.
Like, it's probably, I guess it would be like she's never had that before, and he's doing all the things that, you know.
Yeah, it's everything that you're scared of, like in a sexual nature, it's everything that you're scared of just embodied.
Yeah. And so, and then I think that's what it is, where Larry's like real, you know, clean and all missionary, lights off, that's it. He's more like, hey, leave the lights on and we're going to chain you to a wall. Frank is a wild one.
Frank's a freak.
Which, hey, you know, ain't going to yuck nobody's yum, but...
To each your own.
You do what you want. He's moving a bed upstairs, and I think that's what it is. Like, he's moving a bed with these two movers, trying to move the mattress upstairs.
Feeding them beer, which I don't understand. If you already are at that level where you can't move the furniture, because, like, plus the two movers are, like, perving off, okay?
Yeah.
First of all, like, they're perving on Julia. And then his daughter, Christy, actually comes from her flat in Brooklyn to come and visit. And she's in the kitchen, and the faucet burst off.
Yeah.
So she gets all wet. Well, then it turns out that, you know, he's feeding the movers beer.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, he needs help trying to get the mattress up the stairs.
Yeah.
And so he's like, hey, Julia, could you go get us a beer? Oh, heck no. She's going to go upstairs and fantasize.
No,
She don't got time for that, you know, manual labor stuff. So while they're trying to move the bed after beer, you know... Larry ends up getting cut.
Yeah.
He cuts his hand on a nail that's projecting out of one of the banister boards.
Yeah.
And he starts bleeding. And Larry, I guess, is like terrified of blood.
Yeah.
So he starts holding it like it's going to like disappear.
So he walks in on
Julia fantasizing.
And his blood just goes all over the floor. He got messed up pretty bad.
Yeah.
So she, you know, helps him wrap it up and tells his daughter, hey, you know, we need to go to the hospital. He needs stitches, you know.
Can you take him to the hospital?
Oh, yeah, can you take him?
Can you take him? Because
I got more fantasizing to do in there.
The two movers are here, and I've got more fantasizing to do.
So he goes to the hospital. And what happens is, you know, Larry's blood gets soaked up into the floorboards, and
the camera angle takes you underneath the floorboards,
and it's like a heartbeat.
Yeah, there's a heart that looks like a dried up habanero pepper, yeah. But it's like illuminated, and you just see like these membranes and stuff that it's kind of like almost like a spider's web.
Yeah,
and the blood starts soaking it up, and it looks almost like nerve endings, like absorbing,
yeah,
you know, the nourishment that comes from the blood.
Yeah, and it comes out from this,
which is crazy because when you're watching it, you're gonna see like maybe, I mean, generously, I'm gonna give it maybe 50 to 60 drops of blood that come out.
Yeah, but
through this 60 drops of blood, Frank basically absorbs it and becomes like almost like a half man.
Yeah.
Like his skeletal structure is reassembled. He gets his arms and everything back.
Was done really, really good.
Oh, it was done amazingly. The practical effects on
the rebuild of Frank.
Everything.
Dude, it was done so good. Which
you think of like when you go into like what they actually used to do the practical effects in this movie, most of the practical effects in this movie were created by using condoms and lube.
Yeah, see, and like it's
that,
just, yeah.
It's like, you know, you look at that and some of the stuff that they were able to pull off, like they used the lube as the blood and the slime coating on the monsters because it stayed wet during filming.
Yeah.
And never dried up. So that was essentially what they used. I mean, they used what they had, but, you know.
They just went to Diddy's mansion. They're like, hey, man, we need to film a movie. We need
help. Free the Cenobites.
We need supplies. Anyways.
So, yeah. You know, once he's come into being, obviously, it's like they have this telepathic link.
Yeah.
You know, Frank and Laura. You know, it's like they have this telepathic link. And so, or pardon me, Frank,
Julia. Yeah.
So Frank and Julia have this telepathic link, and she goes back upstairs and...
Yeah, because she just cannot stop thinking about Frank, man. And when she goes up there, that's when Frank reveals himself, and he is this just dried up person, pretty much. He's not fully a human yet. So at first she's startled because she doesn't know what the hell it is, which I would be too. I would have bolted out of there. He closes the door and he says, it's me, Frank. But then he says, don't look at me. And then he says, help me, but don't look at me.
Well, he doesn't want, you know.
He's
not completely formed yet. He's like green and grotesque. His eyes are sunken in.
Yeah.
He hasn't got enough blood to completely reform himself. Yeah. So he doesn't want her to look, but he explains to her that, you know, they made a promise when they cheated.
Yeah.
They made a promise that she would do anything for him.
Yeah.
So he's calling that in, and he's saying, basically, you said you'd do anything for me.
Yeah.
And he kind of explains that he needs to get out of the house.
Yeah.
That he needs her to help him because he's trying to get out of the house because they know where to find him.
Yeah.
Because he opened the puzzle box in the house.
And he still has the puzzle box.
And he still has the puzzle box in the corner. And he is trying to just become a full man so he can go on the lam and get away from the Cenobites.
Yeah. And it's just so crazy, man, because before she finds out, you know, he's alive, they're having a party downstairs. And she's just like, she's disconnected. Like, she's not even, like, they're all laughing, joking, having fun. Kirstie is, you know,
her and
this dude are like
her and her boyfriend that she lives with.
Yeah,
what's his name? Steve.
Steve.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like they're all having fun.
It's a dinner party. They're downstairs. Yeah. They're drinking. They're having fun.
Except for her.
Yeah, she just excuses herself.
Yeah, gives everybody a peck on the cheek, except for her husband.
Except for her husband, she just walks past him and just deuces him out real quick. Yeah.
And then she goes upstairs and the whole scene happens with Frank and all that. And then in the middle of the night when she's sleeping, she's like, I guess I will do like anything for Frank. So she goes like in there and she tells him like, hey, I'll do anything, you know, to help you come back and, you know, be fully human again. Anything, like she'll do it. And so she starts her little
killing spree.
Yeah, her little killing spree where she pretty much hangs out at a bar and lures lonely men to the house and feeds them to Frank pretty much, man.
Yeah, hits them with a hammer, and that's another thing. Like, this movie didn't, I mean, for the level of torture and stuff that it didn't have a lot of gore and violence.
Yeah, not too much gore, yeah.
And they took the violence out of it because, like, people were supposed to be getting hit with the hammer because she, like, literally smacks people two times with the hammer.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like feeding a spider. Like, you throw the cricket in there, and then she turns her back, and the spider comes out of its little cave, and it eats the cricket.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, you can come back in and watch me now. But that's kind of like how you know, she commits these crimes. She gets them in there under the ruse of we're going to, you know, make love. And they're always like these weird, like...
lonely dudes. Yeah,
I mean,
like
I don't know where she's finding these guys. These guys are spending, like, their lunch break because it's always, like, daytime.
Yeah, it's like
12 noon. They're like, hey, let's go out and have, like, you know, a gin and tonic.
And these aren't, like, construction workers or, like, oh, man, it's been a long day. I need to, like, pound a beer out.
No.
These guys are, like, just, like you said, on their lunch break, sipping on some whiskey or gin or something. And
she gives them nothing. I mean, like, there's no, like, petting. There's no make-out session. There's nothing. She just, like, she's as cold-blooded with these victims as she is with her own husband. It's just kind of like, oh, yeah, nibble on my neck a little bit. Oh, rub on my breast. And then, bah, hit you in the head with a hammer.
Yeah.
Like, she's just cold-blooded and brutal.
Yeah. So she keeps this up for a while, and she's keeping Frank hidden upstairs, you know, make sure nobody finds out, you know, that he's actually alive still.
Yeah.
Because I think the brother doesn't even care either. Larry's like...
The brother doesn't even, like, really technically notice. The one who really is on the trail, like, consistently through the movie is Kirsten.
Yeah.
Kirstie.
Kirstie, yeah. She suspects... She doesn't really like Julia.
I wonder why.
I mean, I get, you know, the stepmom and all that, but, like, you could tell, like, dude, like, she even sees something weird going on with...
Yeah. Like, when she excuses herself at dinner, you know, Kirstie goes upstairs to kind of see, like, what is she doing? Is she really going to bed? It's like 8:30.
Yeah.
It's a grown woman here.
She was hammered, and she was going upstairs to use the restroom.
Yeah.
And Julia's just standing there.
Yeah. Acting all weird in the hallway. Yeah.
And she's like, hey, how are you? Like, trying to be nice. And Julia's just looking at her, and it's like, that's not weird, is it? Like... I don't know. Julia is a cold bitch, man. she's
just a bad person.
Obviously, I mean, she played her really, really well, but God, man, she's just such a cruel bitch.
Well, yeah, like 35 years ago, you're still sitting here talking about it, like 30 odd years later about what a see you next Thursday, shiz.
Yeah. So anyway, so she keeps this thing up, and it's these lonely men who are just very, very vocal about how lonely they are,
because
one of the guys she brings home, he's like, I get lonely sometimes. And I'm like, all right, man. Like,
I think that was number three. Yeah. These guys don't even, like, literally in the credits, they don't even get names. They're like, victim one, victim two,
lonely guy,
victim three.
The guy who gets lonely sometimes. And so she does this, and Julia's like, hey, I want an explanation. Like, why are you pretty much a walking corpse right now, feeding off of these dudes? Like, I need, you know, an explanation. So he holds up the puzzle, and it pretty much shows her, like, what happened to him, that, you know, he was ripped apart. And he even says that he was pretty much chasing the sexual dragon, and he needed something else to...
Yeah, he needed a step further into, you know, that basically to push the limits.
And the Cenobites pretty much showed him the line, you know, between pleasure and pain, and kind of kept him there.
Yeah.
And he's like, but I need to be whole again because they're going to find me. I need to, you know. But on one of the, I guess, little murders, Kirstie is going home, you know, to visit Julia, because the dad wants them to have, like, some kind of
a relationship, because he can see that it's strained from, you know, when they had dinner a couple nights earlier.
Yeah. So she goes over there, but she catches Julia.
With victim number three,
with the loneliest man in the world. And Julia doesn't notice her, but Kirstie is like, dude, I knew you were sleazy. I knew you were a sleazebag. Like,
yeah, she sees them go into the house together.
Yeah.
And then she, like, follows suit and goes up. And then while Frank's pretty much explaining everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, victim number three has been laid to waste.
Yeah, and Kirsty goes upstairs and finds out that, she finds the dude coming out of the room. He's, like, all dried up now.
Yeah, he's begging her for help. He's, like, reaching out to her, like, help me, help me, help me. And then, obviously, Frank comes out from behind the door.
Yeah.
And takes victim number three back into the room. And now Frank's like, oh my gosh, you know.
Kirsty, like, yeah.
Kirsty's a looker. I mean, forget the fact that we have a family tie and this is my niece.
Yeah.
Like.
He's like, come to daddy and all that. And I'm like.
Yeah, there's a lot of daddy.
Yeah, I mean, that just shows what kind of person Frank is. That's how. How shitty he is, pretty much. That he tries to even get his own niece, you know. Which is wild in itself. Like, dude, weren't you just you want Julia, and then you
wanna... You stole Julia. You stole your brother's wife. That didn't feed your your sexual deviancy. Now you're like, oh man, my niece is here. I got to give you a taste of that.
Yeah.
So like obviously Frank has no boundaries.
Yeah.
It's just so they get into it, and the puzzle box comes into play.
Yeah, she takes it.
And she takes it and she throws it out the window.
Yeah.
And then she beelines away from them as they're trying to, get her and restrain her. And she beelines down the stairs and runs out the front door. And in that moment, she runs and she grabs the puzzle box.
Yeah.
And runs essentially to get back.
Yeah, but what she saw was, like, wild. Like, you saw your uncle.
Yeah, you're
pretty much...
Your uncle's with no
flesh. Skin. Yeah, he's just pure muscle, and which he's like eating all these people, and he takes like three guys for him to get to at least the muscle state. And it seems like it's taking forever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the first was like what 48 to 60 drops, let's say generously, and he's able to go from a habanero pepper and some, some nerve endings.
Yeah.
And he becomes like almost a fully mobile form.
Yeah.
Three full people were the blood later and he's still like,
And I think it's like that whole peeling flesh thing. It's like, you're not going to be flesh anymore because of what you went through. Like they ripped you apart. Like you're no longer going to reach what you were before they found you.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. I think that's why it's taking so long for him to reach the actual flesh point, because he's never going to get his flesh back. Like the Cenobites,
they took it.
Yeah, they took it. Like it's over. Even though he's still trying to get there, I don't think he'll ever reach that point. Of course, we won't see it because he's
Yeah, he has other plans for flesh.
Yeah. So, but she is wandering down the street because of what she saw, and finally she passes two nuns, which don't even help her.
Yeah.
They're just looking at her like, oh, this dirty chick with a cube in her hand.
Well, the whole, like, the weird experiences thing through the whole movie, it's almost like there's an angel or something around Kirsty because, okay, there's a man who keeps appearing at her workplace.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a homeless, disheveled man.
Yeah.
And she works at a pet store, and he comes in, and he walks over to the cricket bin. He puts his hand in, and the crickets are all, and he starts eating them. And this guy's like a constant, like, her and Steve one night are going home to their flat, and they pass him, and he's kind of like a secondary character.
Yeah.
That really never really gets explained. He just kind of exists. And so it's kind of the same with the nuns, because you kind of get the feeling, I mean, if you know anything about, Bible and the fact that, this is kind of, based on a faith-based thing, John the Baptist ate locust and honey. So when I first saw it, I was like, it's like John the Baptist. Maybe this is like a holy entity, because obviously you get the feeling that, Pinhead, as he later gets coined, was like the warden of hell.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, well, that's the demonic influence, but the angelic influence is this John the Baptist-esque character eating locust.
Yeah.
The nuns.
It looks homeless, Kind of like a false image, like, exactly. Oh, I look psycho, but I'm really not.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm like the crazed man in the woods, baptizing people. That it made sense when I was a kid. And so she keeps walking, the nuns like completely are just like, we don't know nothing about nothing. So she's walking, and all of a sudden she just goes down.
Yeah.
And passes out. And like three people come around, and they rush around. You see like three people come around her, and they're like, oh. And
yeah.
Next thing you know, she wakes up in the hospital.
Yeah. Or in a psych ward. It's
something, but these people don't care about this girl. Because that was like, when I first saw this movie, I thought that that was part of almost like some sub story with the Cenobites.
Yeah.
Was, you know, this medical clinic, because like the nurse is there and she asks, you know, where am I?
She's like watching a flower bloom on TV. Yeah.
And she's asking her, you know, where am I? And they're like, oh, wait a minute. I got to go get the doctor. I can't tell you. So they go and get the doctor, and then the doctor appears, and he's got the puzzle box.
Yeah, she's like, I want to talk to my dad. He goes, oh, we could do that, but you need to lay down. Like,
You need to sit your butt down. And then he, like, puts the puzzle box there.
He's, like, not going to tell. Like, dude, you're not a cop. Like, you're tell me what's wrong with me. Like, what's going on? What happened? I don't remember. And he's like, let's first start with this puzzle box. Like, what, you know, why do you have this? You were clinging on it pretty hard. And she's like, I don't remember. Like, I just.
Yeah.
I passed out, and here I am, here in this, you know, hospital bed. He said, well, I'm going to leave it here, and, you know, maybe it'll jog your memory, and I'll come back. That's it? All right.
Yeah.
And so she's left with it and pretty much solves it herself, too. And with solving it, it opens up that door that, you know, to I guess, hell.
Yeah.
And it breaks open the wall, and it's like a long... like
long hallway. It looks almost like a double reflection from like a dual mirror.
Yeah.
Like a mirror in a mirror. It's like this archway that goes down, and obviously it just continues like as far as the eye can see.
Yeah.
And so she decides, you know, like you do, you're in the hospital, you're in the psych ward, you just played with this gold.
I think it's like at that point I'm out of options. The door's locked. I can't leave.
Yeah.
So
there's a hallway.
Yeah.
Let's go down it. So she starts going down the hallway. She gets about 8 down, and all of a sudden, it's not one of the Cenobites.
No, it's like a creature.
It's almost like a gatekeeper or something.
Like
it's
a hellhound, I guess you could say.
It's like this elongated, like dual-mouthed beast.
Well, it has a stinger on top.
Yeah, it looked like kind of like a scorpion.
Yeah.
And then it like starts coming towards her, and she starts hauling butt back towards her.
Yeah, it's not touching the ground. It's climbing. It's using its both of its hands to like run with each wall.
Yeah.
Pretty much, pushing it forward. And so now it's chasing her. And I don't know, man, this thing was wild to look at, but it's pretty cool, man. Everything they have in this movie is just pretty done really, really well. And it's just chasing her all the way down this hallway, and she makes it out. But it's like the wall closes behind her, and you could still hear it. Like, it's still there. Like, it's the dimension, like, that's neighboring our dimension. It's there, but it's not there. And it's like...
yeah, it's on the other side of the veil.
It
can, you know, you can still communicate with it, but it's not able to get at you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's oh, man, it's just so cool. But she... makes it out.
Yeah.
And is on her way back home because, you know, her dad, she needs to make sure her dad's okay because of what she saw. She doesn't want him to
fall victim.
And back at home, they're worried because, like, hey, Kiersey got away. Like, she's going to tell the authorities. She's going to tell somebody.
But then, you know, the weird part about it is that, you know, obviously Julia starts saying, well, I had her, you know, I have her at the hospital. Which I kind of didn't, I didn't see the relation because it's like, how'd you have her at the hospital? She grabbed the box. She ran away. How'd you admit her into a hospital?
Yeah.
The three people on the street found her. It wasn't like you know, that was the only thing that kind of.
Unless they called the house and she's like, no, keep her in the hospital. Like, keep her.
They could have. Yeah.
Don't let her out. She's crazy. You know, she's been doing this.
She's hallucinating. Yeah. She's doing street drugs or something.
Yeah.
Because you know? she's supposed to be in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see, you know, maybe that's what happened.
Yeah. And Frank's like, hey, well, now the Cenobites really know that I'm here or they're going to really come because, you know, the box has been touched by somebody else. Oh, that's another thing. Yeah, she gets, that's what happens. I forgot about that. She gets confronted by the Cenobites because she solves the puzzle.
Yeah.
And so they come into her room.
At the hospital after she gets away from the hallway demon.
Yeah, the hallway demon. And their Pinhead is pretty much telling her, like, hey, like, we're going to do this to you. We're going to torture you. We're going to, you know.
You're going to know pleasure. Like,
yeah.
You're going to know pain and you're going to know pleasure, basically.
Yeah, like, very, very well.
Yeah, you're going to know, yeah.
Pretty much to a point to where you can't tell which is which anymore. And she's like, no, like, pleading with them, like, you know, don't take me. Like, I didn't know what the puzzle box was. I didn't know, you know, what it, in, you know, it was attached to it.
And then she breaks rule number three. And she's she drops the name.
Yeah.
She starts snitching. And she's like, hey, do you know Frank Cotton? And then, that perks the Cenobites up because they're like, wait a minute. Frank Cotton, she's like, yeah, he got away from you.
Like, no, no one's
like, I've got, seen him. And they start, like, scouring their memory banks, and they're like, no one gets away from us.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know what you're talking about. And she's like, no, he got away from you. Like, I can tell you, kind of like I said, she's snitching.
Yeah.
I'll tell you where he is. And they're just like,
Yeah, they're just like,
They essentially let her go. They don't give her a pardon.
Yeah, she's like, I will show you where he's at. You know, that way you don't take me. And he's like, maybe we'll.
Yeah, we'll think about it. Yeah, you know? Yeah, we got to see what kind of a case we build against this Frank Cotton guy.
Yeah.
So she goes back to the house to check on her father because, you know, by this point, obviously Frank and Julia are at the house.
Yeah, and Frank needs flesh already. He needs pretty much something to wear
because he needs to leave. Skin. Yeah, yeah. He's, you know, Julia's kind of prompting him to leave. And he's like, I can't leave because I have no skin.
Yeah.
How am I going to go outside, like, looking from something from the body's display or something? Yeah. I can't.
So Frank kind of insinuates, like, hey, we're going to have to take Larry. Like, that's it. And she's like, no, I still love him. It's like, well, do you, though? Like,
did you ever?
You didn't really love him. But he's like, oh, you still want to be with him and this and that. And she's like, no, like, I want to be with you. But it's like she kind of cares about Larry, you know, because he's the innocent one and all this.
I think she's just like so scandalous that she just doesn't want to kill him.
Yeah.
Like, I think she doesn't give a crap what happens to him as long as she's not the one to do the dirt.
Pretty much. Like,
oh gosh, I would hate to see him go. Like, I'd hate to have to kill him, but the insurance money looks good.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what it was.
So when Kirsty gets there, something's off with Dad. Like,
yeah. Because basically, Mom and Frank have lured Larry
upstairs and
you know, and so now you see Larry's skin.
Yeah.
And you notice it's Frank's voice.
Yeah.
So he's putting on like a new suit. And so he's wearing his little Larry suit around the house.
Yeah.
And so Kirsty runs in and she's like, oh my gosh, you know, she starts talking to her dad.
Yeah, she's like, I was worried about you. I'm glad you're okay. Yeah,
I'm glad you're okay. Yeah. Which, you know, if you look at your dad, like, Frank's not wearing the suit very well.
Yeah.
Like, all around the face, all around the ears and the hairline, like, there's just blood and there's, like...
Like gelatinous
material. Yeah. And it's like, you can tell it doesn't look right. It's almost like, you know, some like reanimator stuff.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is this? And so she just sits there and she's like talking to her dad. If I go see my dad, he's got like his hairline cut off and there's like blood leaking out, I'm not going to be like, hey, pops.
Yeah.
No. So and
she's like, hey, like, this is what's going on. He's like, oh, no. Julia told me everything about Frank and what he did was horrible. Like, but I had to take care of him. I had to put him down like a dog pretty much. Because he was a sick man. And she's like, I don't believe you. Like, I want to see it. So she's like, he tells Julia, hey, well, show her where he's at. Go to the attic, and there's a crumpled up body that's peeled of its flesh just laying there. And she's like, okay, like, I kind of believe you. Like, I get it. And so, but she does believe it and she doesn't believe it. It's like, there's something off, even though the hairline again.
Yeah.
It's all messed up. But they're talking about, you know, what they're going to do. Like, and it's like freaking her out. And finally, Frank is like, oh, well, come daddy.
Yeah.
Like,
Frank, he has no game. Yeah. Like, in this case, he has no game.
Yeah. He just can't play it off that well. because he's talking about, like, you know, what is it, like, leaving and just weird stuff. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, this is...
he's not playing the role well at all. And he's still trying to get Huggins and stuff. That's the weird part. He's still trying to, like, lust out on her.
Yeah, and she's like, he's like, oh, well, come to daddy. And that's when it sets off that, oh, wait, this is not my dad. This is Frank worrying my dad, pretty much. And that's when, you know, she starts to fight back. Julia holds her and is going to, you know, and Larry or Frank, I keep forgetting because it's Frank wearing Larry's skin.
He like gives her the forefinger, like, you know, but basically Kirstie's trying to get away.
Yeah.
And as Julia's holding her, they use this weird finger thing where they go into like the stomachs. And he takes the four fingers and goes into Julia's stomach and drains her.
Well, he was going to stab Kirstie.
Yeah.
And Kirstie moves last minute.
With the magic switchblade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he stabs Julia. And instead of being like, oh, no, Julia, because he doesn't care about her.
No.
He just sticks his finger in her and takes all of her life. And it's like, see, dude, he was playing you from the get-go. Like, he didn't care about you.
She don't care. We're not sad that she's gone.
Yeah, no, I wasn't sad. Not one bit. I was not sad when she died. But now there's this, you know, chase going on throughout the house. And she hides in one of the storage rooms. And Frank goes in there, doesn't find her. But she finds the bodies
that Julia's been hiding of, you know,
which how it didn't stink. I don't know.
Three lonely men that she's, you know, drug into the house.
And so she comes out of the room and Frank finally gets her. They go into the attic and he's pretty much talking about, you know, his dad or her dad. She realizes that that body now is her dad. And, and then the Cenobites show up in the room, in the attic, before the chase happens. And
the floorboards start glowing.
Yeah.
And everything.
And the Cenobites, are like, hey, we want to know who peeled the flesh off of this dude.
Yeah, who did this?
Yeah. And at first, she's like, no, because she thinks it's her dad. And then finally, later on,
she's trying to throw the trail off Larry because she doesn't want them to find out. But then it comes full circle that it's Frank.
Yeah.
You know, that Larry's laying there, and now Frank's running around in the suit.
Yeah. And so when they go back up there the second time, they show up again, and because he reveals that he is Frank. He just had to say it with his own words. So when they hear that, I guess, you know, from the veil, they hear that, oh, this is Frank.
Yeah, they were just laying and waiting. They're she had the wire. When she opened it, she got the wire because she was snitching.
Yeah.
sorry to put it in crime terms, but that's exactly what. She was wearing a wire by opening the box.
Yeah.
She contacted, you know, the DEA or whatever. Yeah. And so they're just sitting there waiting. They're waiting for, you know, him to confess that he is Frank. And the minute that he, like, narcs on himself, they're like, oh, woo. And, the you know, like I said, the lights come on, the floorboards get illuminated, everything. That's the, you know, that's the blueberries and the raspberries, you know, in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, and he was pissed. He was like, you set me up. Like, you brought them to me.
Yeah.
And so when she's trying to leave, he's going to slice her up. But before he can, they hook her.
Out comes the hooks.
And, he starts to get, you know, pulled in every direction. And now they have him. Like, that's it. It's over. And he's finally to a point to where he is just being pulled, like, just
his skin is being pulled out. It's just, you know, it's basically like a skin tapestry. There's all these big, huge, like, fish hooks in him, and it's pulling his skin tight, and like it's elongating and distorting his face.
Yeah,
his face is all stretched out, like, side to side, and it's just like completely, you know, just there. And he's still but the weird part about it is, like, you can see his face and it's not a look of pain.
No, because it's that play. Because
he's so used to, like, that kind of play, you know, from all the time that he did spend at the mercy of the Cenobites.
Yeah.
That, you know, he feels no pain.
Yeah.
So he's just there, and he's, like, more hatred now.
Yeah.
He's just filling in because he's sitting there, like, just yelling at Kirstie that, you know, kind of like he wants her done for.
Yeah.
He can't believe that she did that to him and betrayed him.
even though he was trying to mack on her, like, yeah, trying to, yeah.
Like, he never did anything for her. He was a scumbag uncle, but okay. So they have him completely pulled apart, and as we're playing, she turns around and she looks, and basically he speaks the line that probably was one of the
most iconic
lines of the entire movie, which was Jesus wept, which is John, you know, chapter 11, verse 35. Yeah. Jesus wept, shortest verse in the entire Bible.
Yeah.
And then it finally stretches his flesh limit so far that, and he just basically disintegrates. Yeah. He goes back into his 18 pieces of face on the floor, like was there when, you know, Butterball first, you know, put his skin back together.
Yeah. But, you know, they didn't make a deal with her. They just said that they wanted him. They never made a deal. So the female Cenobite is like, you're leaving so soon? Like, no, it's your turn now.
Yeah.
And Pinhead pretty much tells her that, you know, we have much sights to show you. We're going to, you know, it's your turn to get your soul ripped apart now.
But little do they know that Steve, her boyfriend, has actually showed up on the scene.
Yeah, it's his turn to,
It's his turn to be the knight in shining armor.
And what she does is she starts to reverse the puzzle box now. So she unsolves it. And you can see them start to disappear now.
Yeah, each step that she takes from solving the puzzle box is she makes each individualized move. Each one move removes one of the Cenobites.
Yeah. Yeah, so you get Pinhead, he disappears, the female Cenobite disappears, the house is starting to crumble and pretty much cave in on itself, and so she has to try to figure out how to leave, and her dude shows up, and all of them, like, they disappear because of the puzzle box, except for the Butterball guy. He was going to kill Steve, and he ended up just getting crushed by the house.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, they did that one dirty, man. Like, the other ones, like, they got, you know, they...
I mean, they even, like...
They were sent back to hell.
Yeah, even that guardian creature that was in the hallways.
Yeah.
You know, like the hellhound or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, because they were going to leave.
Even it got, like, taken back in. Yeah. Butterball gets no love.
Yeah, he gets just crushed by beams and all that.
Fat dude just goes down with the house.
Yeah, so when they open the door, that creature comes back and tries to take the box. And she fights him off and, you know, sends him back to hell, too. And cuts to, they're standing outside the pretty much, I guess, the falling remains of the house. And everything's on fire. There's no more house. It's just pure ground.
And it's weird because there's like one single solitary chair.
Well, that's what I was confused about because when I was rewatching it, it's like, is that still the place of the house or is it just like, but. That's the only thing that makes sense because there's like chairs and stuff like that. I was like, yeah, but there's no foundation. And I'm like, okay, so I guess it's just.
There's no rubble. There's like little, you know, burning piles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she's like, well, I'm just going to throw this box. Like, I'm done with it. It's just thrown into the fire. And so that's what she does. And then the homeless man comes.
The John the Baptist man. And he comes in and he grabs the puzzle box. And when he grabs and takes possession of the puzzle box, he turns into like a skeletal dragon.
Yeah, like a demon looking dragon. Yeah, like he's the one that always makes sure that the box, you know, is sold to somebody.
Gets back in the cycle. Yeah, he's the one who keeps it in rotation.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, curse pass.
Yeah,
yeah. He is. Curse pass. Yeah, he is the Smokey of the Cenobite world.
Yeah. And so he flies off with it, and then you cut to back to the in Asia again, and it's the guy selling the box again, and he's like, "What's your pleasure?" And it's back, you know.
It's got a new purchaser, and you know, so the story perpetuates.
Yeah, and that was Hellraiser. I mean, again, done really well, and then you have many, many, many. Sequels after that.
Yeah, I think you have seven altogether. I think
there's 11 seven. Movies.
Is there?
All together, yeah. Yeah, there's 11 movies. There's Hellbound, there's Hell on Earth, Bloodlines, Inferno, Hellseeker, Deader.
And then Judgment,
Hellworld. Online, they go on the
internet. Oh, yeah, Hellworld.
Revelations.
Revelation.
You said Judgment, right?
Judgment.
And then the new one that came out on Hulu. So there's like there's a ton of them. Yeah,
the remake was actually good too. The female.
Yeah, dude.
I thought the remake that they did. I thought, you know, certain people didn't really care for it. I kind of liked it.
I think it's just because Pinhead was a female this time, but I think she did really really well.
Yes, but all the Cenobites are pretty much, you know, they're ambiguous in nature. So yeah, it's not like you can really get, you know, I mean, they came at it with, you know, she had many, many names, but I mean, her actual name was Deep Throat.
Yeah.
Because they.
Yeah, her voice box is like exposed.
Yeah, her voice box is exposed and it looks like a female genitalia.
Yeah.
They all had kind of like neat things like, Pinhead actually in his piercings actually had a rhombus, which is the symbol for his master, who's Leviathan. So they had little things. So yeah. I couldn't really see why you'd get like really weirded out because
yeah,
they're ambiguous in nature. They're yeah. not, you know, there's no deform, you know, no specific pseudo gender, I guess you'd say, but who knows?
Yeah. I mean, everything was done really well. Clive Barker does make some
absolutely. He makes
interesting characters.
Yeah.
So either way, no matter what gender or whatever you put in there, it's going to be fascinating to begin yeah. with. I mean, and then Doug Baker, I mean, playing Pinhead is always going to be iconic. His
yeah.
voice, his mannerisms, the way he plays them.
Which is funny because like a little strange side note to that is that New Line actually.
Or Doug Bradley, sorry.
Doug Bradley.
Yeah.
New Line actually, they went to. Who the heck did they go with? Oh, they actually went with Lance Henriksen. They approached Lance Henriksen before Doug Bradley was actually even cast.
Mm-hmm.
And they offered him the role of lead Cenobite because Pinhead just came about because, obviously, of his appearance.
Yeah.
He was never, like, technically titled Pinhead. It was something that just came because it was an easy comparison.
Yeah.
So Lance Henriksen was actually offered it. And it's funny that we were bringing up the point that there's, like, 11 of these things or whatever because... He actually passed on it because he was like, no, because I feel like this movie's going to warrant sequels.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get caught in a perpetual cycle of remaking the same movie. So he actually passed on it, but later went with Pumpkinhead.
Yeah.
And a cool little side note on that is if you do watch an homage to the fact that Pinhead was there, if you watch the last Pumpkinhead, Blood Feud.
But yeah.
Blood Feud actually has... all the puzzle boxes in one of the rooms in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, they're on a table. And I always wondered that when I saw Blood Feud. I was like, why are there all those, you know, puzzle boxes from Hellraiser? Where did these two storylines tie together? And I never yeah. really knew what it was. And lo and behold, it was because, you know, Lance Henriksen was actually offered the role of lead Cenobite in the original Hellraiser.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... It's so many cool stuff that's in this movie, man. I mean, everything was done really, really well. It had an X rating because of all the stuff in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
$100. But it's Clive Barker. I mean, Clive Barker has that... He has that feel. His books, his storylines, it's... You know,
yeah.
It's very heavily influenced by the BDSM community.
Oh, yeah.
You
big
know,
time, yeah.
He's always been outspoken on his sexuality. He's never hidden the fact
yeah.
that he's an openly gay man. And this, like, this movie's great. It's like, you know.
And I think that's what it is. I think it's that, you know, you can put sex in a movie and be like, oh, it's a horror movie and it has, like, you know, some sex scenes in it. But this one was more about the lust of it.
Yeah.
Of sexual
just
drive.
The carnal nature of the whole entire yeah. movie. It was all, you know. It was all carnality, and like I said, the seven deadly sins, the fact that anything goes, like, you know, your cup of tea is not my cup of tea, it's all
yeah.
right there. And I think that was one of the great things, and I think, you know, as far as Clive Barker, in certain circles, he does get a high, you know, a high recognition.
Yeah.
But he was making, like, you know, BDSM and gay horror cinema before it was, you know, cool and trendy
yeah.
and, like, the thing to do. When that was still, like, extremely outsider, you know, this was, you know, mid-80s.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really universally accepted. But he came through and, you know, he made this and he made you feel welcome. And he did speak to a lot of the carnal urges and desires that people have.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was one thing that, you know, everybody has that feeling. There are limits.
Yeah.
That, you know, you won't really jump for unless really somebody opens that door for
yeah.
you. And it's presented, and then you know, you'd be surprised at what you're really into and what you're...
Yeah,
you know,
once you're exposed to it.
Absolutely. Once you're exposed to it and you cross that threshold...
And how desensitized you can get if you keep going down that...
Yeah, that's... Road. Absolutely. And that's where this movie came in, you know. It was just amazing and opening on so many levels.
Yeah, that's what happened, I mean, with Frank. Frank was into some wild stuff and ended up, you know, having to find... You know, he's trying to chase that sexual dragon. He's trying to reach that point that he had. I mean, it's like you just become desensitized, you know, if you keep doing more and more things. Me and you were talking about it before we recorded about, you know, it's like pornography, you know. At first, it starts off vanilla, and then it you know.
It's a constant escalation.
Yeah, it's constant escalation until
just
finally.
Just like with anything, with drug use, it's, you know. You know, where when you first do that first line or that first bump, and it just continues to excel, and you're always chasing it, and everything else is going to go by the wayside.
Yeah, and that's why he wants the box, you know, because I think he finds that, you know, when he learns what the Cenobites are, I think it's what he wants. He's like, oh man, this could be like the next, you know, this probably can help me reach that point that I want. And he gets it, but unfortunately it
comes at too high a cost.
Yeah. Same thing with Julia. You know, Julia had that taste of Frank, and then she wants it so much that she ends up killing people just to get another taste of it.
Yeah.
Even though it's not guaranteed. But, I mean, they do, like...
Yeah, she never gets the fulfillment.
Well, she does get smashed out, but he's wearing Larry's skin.
Yeah.
Because they do, like, for some reason, like, as soon as he gets Larry's skin, they have to, like...
They have to seal the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, you killed three people and hid, you know, his soul.
Well, you can see her losing the minor scraps of humanity that she does have left as she progresses. Because at first she's kind of, you know, she's kind of apprehensive about killing, you know, victim number one.
Yeah.
You know, she's not good. She's not sly at this luring these lonely men back to the house.
Yeah.
But by the third, she's like, dude, I got this. I know how to do this. Like, I'm becoming an expert.
Yeah.
So she's losing those little scraps and semblance of humanity that she has because she's becoming more and more like the monster, Frank.
Yeah. So it's cool to see that kind of comparison in this movie. Yeah, it was really good, man. I always love watching that movie, man, and revisiting it because it's just so good to just see.
Yeah, you get something new out of it every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's Hellraiser, guys. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please follow us on Instagram if you haven't. Link will be in the description of this episode. And rate and review where you can. Leave a comment. Let us know how we're doing, what you like, don't like. And, you know, we'll continue to try to better this podcast and keep on going.
Absolutely.
But other than that, we will see y'all next week.